All right, well, welcome. This is Interfaith from a Young Adult Perspective. We're in Union E, so hopefully you are where you intend to be. And if you intended to be somewhere else but are here, maybe you're in the right place anyway. So I have asked, what is your name? I've asked Lindsay to hand out some note cards. And since we're a pretty small group, we might not need them. But if you're the kind of person who thinks of questions as we're talking and want to write them down so you remember them, go ahead and do that. We'll have a Q&A at the end. I'm Jenica Davis Hockett. I work for the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministries. I'm the Leadership Development Associate. And with me today is Jamie Dingus and Stephen Ballesteros, and they'll introduce themselves in a minute. And with us in spirit is Alex Jensen, who is currently in the Washington, D.C. airport on his way here, and Rochelle Perry, who couldn't make it but is also with us in spirit. So today we're going to be discussing three very distinct forms of interfaith ministry that our Unitarian Universalist young adults are engaging in. And Alex prepared something that I'm going to read as his introduction, and then I'll pass it on to Jamie and Stephen to introduce themselves and tell a little bit about their experience. So Alex Jensen has done young adult interfaith work at California State University, Monterey Bay, and he is a human communications major with a concentration in peace studies and a music minor. He worked with three campus chaplains to develop a monthly interfaith dialogue, group at CSUMB, and he helped to develop their first annual interfaith Thanksgiving service and participated in the annual baccalaureate service on campus for honoring graduating seniors. So the monthly interfaith dialogue was started primarily by their interfaith chaplain, Judy. And Judy and Alex worked closely to develop a general sense of what they thought the campus community needed in terms of faith and spirituality. And they decided that an interfaith dialogue was something potentially really valuable to the campus as in the chaplain's experience, many students often have questions around faith, but they lack the space to ask those questions. So they created a space for students to share their beliefs and to learn from their peers. And the faiths represented at the dialogue ranged from Jewish, Muslim, Christian. I've never heard of that one before. Have you? It's ASATRU. Well, I won't say it then because I don't want to butcher it. Baha'i, Buddhist, and of course Unitarian Universalist perspectives. And they covered a variety of topics like the role of prayer in each of their lives and different traditions that they hold around the winter season and ways that people of all faiths can support LGBTQ community on their campus. And the meetings saw an average attendance of about 6 people. And towards the end of the fall semester, they actually saw a drastic decline in attendance, and it was down to just Alex and 2 of the chaplains at the last meeting of the year. So they realized that they needed to strategize with the way they were reaching their students. And this coming fall, they're going to attempt to bring dialogue back and have the dialogue take on strict student ownership rather than being owned by the chaplains. And they're so excited to see where this goes in the upcoming school year. So the past school year also saw the start of 2 annual services that they plan on holding at on their campus for future students. So with the help of Judy, the chaplain, their ordained interfaith chaplain, they plan out the annual Thanksgiving service, which they held on the main quad of the campus. And the planning involved a lot of moving parts, reaching out to local religious leaders in the area to involve them in the service, organizing a playlist for various music tracks to play during the service, designing and printing an order of service for the service, and coordinating with professors and students to volunteer to help them with the setup and the takedown. So in many ways, this service required planning and forethought way beyond the capacity of a single person. And Alex learned that through working with Judy and the other chaplains, how essential it was to work with others in creating the service for the community. The second service they did brought to the campus was the end of the year baccalaureate service. And this was planned entirely by Father John, an Episcopal priest, and the senior chaplain on campus. Father John was eager to involve students in the service and delegated many speaking parts and readings. And while the service was not greatly attended, the service had meaning for some of the graduates who came. The service gave the campus community an opportunity to honor graduating seniors and thank them for their incredible talents. And we saw the service as a stepping stone in building up a greater service the following year. So Alex wanted to make sure to mention that he actually never planned on getting involved in interfaith young adult work at all before this year. And after briefly meeting with the chaplains, they eagerly welcomed him to the table in organizing these various events. In his experience on his campus, desperately craves some form of spiritual outlet. On their campus, the chapel, left over from days of Army Fort Ord, is used primarily as a multipurpose room and a martial arts training space. And many students think, as Alex once did, as a new student, that while the church building serves as a sanctuary space for students to simply be on campus rather than as a meeting place. So sadly, aside from a quick Lent blessing, the church remains a hollow shell throughout the year, which is a reminder to Alex of the lack of space for student spirituality on campus. So this coming fall, he'll be working with his campus chaplains again in trying to give life to a campus sense of faith and spirituality. And he hopes to see an increase in student involvement in the events on campus. And it's his hope that they'll meet the needs of their students, especially the diverse needs of the student body comprising of many different backgrounds, faiths, and beliefs. So now I want to pass it over to Jamie and Stephen to introduce themselves and their projects.
All right. Hey, y'all. I'm Jamie Dingus, and I'm so excited to talk to you about the interfaith work that I do on college campuses. It's something I'm passionate about, and I believe that doing interfaith work really does build peace and bring more love and understanding. And I think it's necessary. I think it's a necessary tool to use to diffuse tension and build community on college campuses. So a little bit about me. If you are at the YAGA orientation, you may have heard this already, because I'm currently serving as the Young Adults at General Assembly Worship Coordinator. I'm 21, and I just graduated with a bachelor's in religion from Boston University. Originally, I'm from Yorktown, Virginia, where I was raised UU in the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of the Peninsula. However, I'm moving a little more permanently to Boston in the fall to start my Master's of Divinity degree at Harvard Divinity School. And I'm super excited to be the intern for Children's Religious Education at Arlington Street Church up in Boston next year as well. So my experience for this talk comes from my work as the president of the Interfaith Council at Boston University. So that's sort of the primary source I'm drawing from for this. BU's Interfaith Council was started by several dedicated BU students, particularly Abigail Claus, who is also a UU seminarian and has been in leadership in different roles here at GA in the past. The council began and still serves to promote interfaith conversation and dialogue on BU's campus. To give a little context, BU is a large research university right in the middle of Boston. I'm really serious about how in the middle of the city we are. There's a train running up and down our campus at all times. So very urban. We have students from all over the states and 100 countries or more. And it's a diverse campus in terms of religion and political identity, as well as nation of origin and things like that. The Interfaith Council wants to recognize that those differences exist and are valid and important for having a more nuanced and holistic worldview. We also think that when there are points of difference without any respect or understanding, tension can quickly devolve into conflict and violence. Particularly on BU's campus, There are Jewish and Israeli students who are ardently in support of Israel, and there is a similarly large and equally vocal contingent of Muslim, Palestinian, and other students who fully support Palestine. BU typically sees two or three protests and sometimes counter-protests back and forth over these type of issues, and also kind of explosions on social media around these tensions. So in this context of strong opinions, powerful emotions, and intimate personal ties to these situations, there's a need for understanding and dialogue. The point of BU Interfaith is not to solve problems like the Israel-Palestine conflict, but it's to build friendships, relationships, respect, and understanding between students from all sorts of different backgrounds. We believe that if you can sit at a table and eat an ice cream sundae and talk about classes with someone who is different than you, and then you can go and sit at that same table and have a dialogue about an issue or one of these harder differences, you can change the conversation and navigate difficult religious and political situations. To that end, BU Interfaith Council tries to put on around 6 events a year, where a council of 4 to 6 students representing different faith communities, including UUs, Christians, Muslims, Jews, humanists, Sikhs, Hindus, and others, and then our events are open to the BU community and get a much larger participation of BU students. Sometimes our events are social. We start with an ice cream social outside on the BU beach, which is really the only green lawn space on our campus, and then different events throughout the year. We did an interfaith poetry slam and talent show to allow people to creatively speak their truths in a fun, casual environment. More seriously, we did a panel discussion on sexuality, dress, body modification, and basically anything to do with bodies, and had folks from different religious perspectives speaking on their kind of understandings of those topics. It was an informative conversation, and after the formal event ended, most folks stuck around a while longer to chat and make those meaningful relationships. Our final big event every year is the Interfaith Fair. This event is my absolute favorite in our calendar, and it's similar to the club fairs that many colleges hold at the beginning of the year, in that each religious life group on our campus sets up a table, and then folks from the BU community, as well as participants in those religious life groups, walk through the fair and peruse the different tables and have conversations with people whose religious identities are different than theirs, and particularly with religious traditions like Sikhs and Muslims and Hindus. Some folks haven't been exposed to those traditions as much, so it's an opportunity to learn a little bit about someone else's beliefs and culture. And at the beginning of this event, we do a bit of a talent show to kick things off. And so people are invited to do a talent related to their faith. We've had a Sikh turban tying demonstration. So non-Sikhs will come up and they tie a turban on their heads and teach about that practice. We've had Muslim students do slam poetry. We've had Catholic a cappella groups, among others, perform. At the end of the event, we serve an interfaith buffet. Think delicious Middle Eastern food that meets every religious dietary restriction you could come up with. It's quite a time for BU catering, but they make it happen. BU Interfaith exists to bring students together, to have dialogues, and to make our campus a more understanding, compassionate, and open-minded place. I think we have a model that works pretty well, and it's something that I would love to see happening at other universities across the country. I think that's enough of an introduction for now, and I'll pass it over to Stephen. I'll actually pass the mic. There you go.
Thank you. Hey, how's it all? How are y'all doing today? It's good. My name is Stephen Ballesteros, and I'm glad to be here to talk about interfaith from an adult perspective. I'll mostly be talking about my volunteer role with TIHAN, which is the Tucson Interfaith HIV and AIDS Network, which is in Tucson, Arizona, just about an hour south of Phoenix. I guess it really depends on how fast you're driving. My parents would probably say 2 hours. While volunteering with TIHAN, I've witnessed the creation of what I would call beloved community and folks living out a common faith as they offer services to the wider community. And I believe that interfaith work brings out the best in not just individuals, but also in our interconnectedness and our collectivity. But before we continue on that, I'm going to introduce you to more about myself. I currently work as a faith development assistant to the Edmonds Unitarian Universalist Congregation. That's a mid-sized congregation just north of Seattle, Washington. So I work with our families and our faith development, and I shout out two lovely ministers. I also serve our denomination as co-chair of the General Assembly Right Relationship Team. So if you see me walking around, you need me, let me know. I usually have my orange bandana on. I also serve the UA as a member of our nominating committee and created, and I'm now lead facilitator for a team that I call the Pacific Northwest District Multicultural Team to Support Youth of Color, which is exactly what it sounds like. So we're in the PNWD and just creating a space for young folks of color who need that. Let's see. I'm 19 years old, and I'm currently studying both sociology and gender and women's studies at Arizona State University online. And if anyone here knows anything about Tucson, they know it's very controversial that I am going to Arizona State. But it's okay. So far, so good. And as a Tucsonian, and as a brother to a now-deceased sister, Lahana, who was taken from my family by the AIDS virus, I found myself volunteering with the Southern Arizona AIDS Network, Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation. And then from there, bridging into work with TIHAN, which brings together interfaith communities to offer services towards the prevention of HIV and AIDS, as well as offering services to folks in the community who have HIV or AIDS or family members. And obviously that very ties closely into our Pride events and our LGBTQ community and arts communities. And TIHAN is a network of several dozen congregations, churches, mosques, and synagogues that are called to educate, serve, and advocate for these individuals and faith communities. And supported those afflicted and those close to them, and this is key, while sharing the availability of spiritual care. It's a very important part of our process. And you might realize that my experience with interfaith work is very different from Alex and Jamie's, and that it doesn't really occur on a college campus, and also that we have a very specific focus. And I think the distinction is important, as often our communities, or the communities that we as young adults, more adults for that matter, might find ourselves in after a move, already have existing networks for interfaith work, spiritual development, and faith-driven communities. So TIHAN regularly organizes events for the community like fundraisers, vigils, luncheons, and pastoral care drop-ins. They also partner with organizations in the area to host parades and classes and even push forward legislation. And our participants come from many walks of life and ages and faith traditions. However, we all pledge ourselves to the same value statements of respect, service, and sensitivity. And there are smaller groups in these organizations that are specifically for those afflicted with HIV and AIDS, their families, allies, young people, and so on, so that we have the opportunity to connect more deeply with one another in our sub-communities. And we provide a safe space for people to connect and to heal, and most importantly, to celebrate. And so while doing that, we broaden their understanding of faith and the goodness of their neighbors. And that's a big part of our mission statement, is that you're learning with these people, you're bonding over your common ground, and you're meeting people that otherwise you might not meet, and recognizing in the work that you're doing that they're good people, and then learning about their faith after that. And so I think that's important. And so although I now live in Seattle, I stay involved by offering guidance, institutional knowledge to young people who are entering the organization and trying to mobilize on the campuses of the local community college and the University of Arizona, as well as the Downtown Center for Youth Sexuality Education and LGBTQA Pride. So although this organization was always close to home for me, I met many young people there who found their way into these various groups by checking in at their local church, or nonprofits after moving to Tucson. Their stories are many, but they all lay upon the foundation of looking for a place where they can both give and receive love and experience multiple perspectives from multiple faiths. And so the three biggest sources of introduction to this interfaith network, as I see them, are the local universities, college office for student organizations, and the internet. So in summary, interfaith collaboration is deeply rewarding. Existing interfaith communities are most likely just around the corner in your community, but you must go and look for them. And there are many young people who are aching for interfaith community and a place to serve and belong. So perhaps you, your workplace, or your church are in a position to support them. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie and Stephen. So I have a number of questions for you, and I just want, I really hope you don't mind, I'm going to deviate from the script a little bit, and I'm very curious as to some of the reasons you chose to come to this workshop. So if there is anybody willing to come up to the mic and just state a little of your curiosity in attending this workshop, I'd love to know. But not all at once, just one at a time, if you would. Yeah, and there's that mic right there. That might be closer.
Hi, I'm Joe Viola. I'm going to be a senior at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. I came here because I helped found an interfaith club last spring, and we're doing well, but there's a couple concerns that we have with the club and the direction that we want to move it in. We're doing well as we're doing it now, but we're just trying to think, should we go into more social justice type stuff, or should we just stick to interfaith dialogue?
Mm.
So I'm interested in hearing the two perspectives from the speakers up here about the social aspect and the simply just having dialogue. So
perfect. That's exactly one of our questions. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm John. Everybody up there knows me already. I'm a rising sophomore at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I'm in the process of restarting the Unitarian Universalist group on campus, and we just hired a dean of religion and spiritual and religious life at my college, and we want to start an interfaith group. And so that last one is what mostly brought me here.
Hi, I'm Evan Young. I'm campus minister at United Campus Ministry at Ohio University. It's an ecumenical and interfaith campus ministry. And we've been doing interfaith work there for a long time. A long time is like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really interested in A, hearing what y'all are doing and what y'all are interested in, and B, connecting with other people who might have an interest in campus ministry, higher education ministry, because I want to know those people and connect them with some groups that I'm working with.
Awesome. Don't forget to take my card before you leave.
We'll swap.
Yes.
I'm Nancy Olson, and I am the director of Lifespan Faith Formation at All Souls Unitarian in Indianapolis. And so two reasons I came. One, my home church, which is actually Columbus, Indiana, we are getting a women's faith interfaith group together. Different ages, but mostly older, I will say. And we are moving along in that process nicely. And then also, of course, I work with youth and young adults. So I came here because I just wanted to hear from you all. Just absorb whatever I could absorb that I know would be helpful to hear your voices, because I hear a lot of my age voices.
Hello, my name is Dylan, and I am from Rhode Island, currently go to the University of Rhode Island there. As a part of that, I'm involved in a lot of different organizations trying to achieve multiple things. But one manner in which these issues are not being addressed is really from a religious perspective. There, I believe we have a Christian presence, a sort of chapel there, but not necessarily anything relating to Unitarian Universalism or other faiths. Also, being a young adult, I thought this would be an appropriate event to try and learn some information about how to address these issues from an interfaith perspective and try and create a form of presence there as well.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, so let's start, Joseph?
Joe.
Let's start with Joe's question. So how do you balance social justice initiative priorities with interfaith priorities, and is there a potential for one to possibly eclipse the other?
Do you want to take that one first?
Sure.
Okay.
So my experience mainly with Tijuana is, of course, that we are I suppose, more social justice oriented, or at least service oriented. I think there's a distinction, but for this question, that's fine. I think when it comes to the young adult and youth communities that are part of those organizations, what I've experienced in those groups is that the interfaith dialogue is most important, but that having service and a social justice orientation is integral, not necessarily because it needs to be more of a priority, but because finding your common ground and then finding a way to be of service with one another and to reach out into your wider community is a way in which you bring life, I think, to your interfaith groups. And I think it's fine if some groups decide that that's going to be their priority, but my experience has been that it needs to be a part of that so that you're moving forward and that you're setting goals, and that also folks who come to this who would love to have conversation also have the opportunity to connect with more people, to give of themselves, because part, I think, of being a part of a religious institution and taking care of your spirituality with yourself and others is to give, not just to receive. And it's important, I think, to recognize that's not just talking, but sometimes also taking action and then seeing a result. I think for the life of an interfaith group, sometimes that means your group might last longer because then there are other organizations that recognize you and you have events that you can partner around. So on a practical level, that would also be the case.
I fully respect your opinion and have a slightly different one. So I found, at least in my experience doing interfaith work at BU, I don't know if it's the same with Clark University, but at BU, there are so many opportunities to do social justice work. We have a community service center, and we have almost all of the religious life groups themselves do service projects. And so when you have like secular service projects and religious service projects, it kind of becomes a little superfluous to have another like justice focus to the interfaith work. And not that it takes away from that work, but I think I would kind of like to say that having interfaith dialogue is an act of social justice. I think it builds justice and at least builds the foundations for justice on our campuses and in the hearts of folks who are participating in them. And I found that a lot of the folks who choose to participate in interfaith are also the people that volunteer on the weekends and have their projects that they're already passionate about. So it's worked well for us to keep interfaith pretty focused strictly on doing interfaith. Though I will say that in the past we have partnered with our school's community service center on projects. We did a huge meal packing project and like packed something over 1,000 meals in an afternoon for children in the Boston area. So there are opportunities to work with the people who that's their focus, but it's often best to kind of keep the interfaith for interfaith time. Great. Yeah, and Joe said it's recording, so I'm going to repeat what you said. He said that that's basically what is happening at Clark, but there's a faction of folks that would want to be doing more social justice. And I think that is probably just a reality of the social dynamics that happen in interfaith groups, particularly with people that have justice as a value, which is pretty consistent among religious folks. So I think that's a good problem to have, and I would hope that your school has the resources to put those people to work doing the work they want to do.
So remind me of your name in the red again.
Evan.
Evan. Okay, this question might be interested in this one in particular. So why interfaith? What draws you to this work, and why do you think that the need... Why do you think there is a need for this particular work in the world?
Okay, the mic's in front of me, so I'll start this time and we can move it over in a bit. So I was immediately drawn to do interfaith work when I got to BU. It took me a few years to really dig into it, but the passion was there kind of from the get-go. Seeing the diversity of religious life on campus, kind of in contrast to the isolation that happens for college students. And I'm like, okay, we have these people that have these people of all different belief systems, and they're really great folks. And if we could get them together and get them talking and get them not to think that they're not the right people to be around, we could kind of, we could make really meaningful community. If you ever go to Boston University, if you walk down one of our streets, you pass a Hindu center, the Hillel House, and the Catholic center in a block. So there's the religious life presence is so palpable and so visual, but there's also really volatile tension and conflict that happens around political issues on campus. So seeing those two things, interfaith felt like really the only solution to keep peace and build community on campus.
So specifically with Tihan, I found myself into that work as a result of my family situation, and just that folks, like the director of Tihan is a close family friend, and like helped put my sister to rest. So that was just kind of a default. Having said that, in Seattle, I also am involved with like an interfaith homelessness camp, and there's other houselessness as a phrase I'm trying to use more often. So there's other groups also that I've been a part of, and I think I prioritize that, like partnering in blood drives with our local Muslim community, specifically because one, I'm so involved in this faith. That I think it's important to recognize that there are other ones, and that they have strong opinions and leadership as well, and that they're also offering services to their local communities. And it's important to collaborate in that way, and to recognize that the church down the street or the group that meets in the elementary school across the way is likely also full of good people with who are offering something to community, and that if you can connect over that, I think there, you know, that can be difficult, but there's only going to be a positive result, which is that more people know each other, more people have common ground, and that when folks are in need, they have more people that they can reach out to. Apart from that, I think it's also in these times with our rampant Islamophobia and political divisions, as well as even generationally, how we think about money and how we think about worth and value and things such as that, I think it's very important that we take the time to connect with others and to recognize those communities and those names and those topics and those religious institutions as individuals who, if at least bare minimum, we know their names and we've worked on a project with them or had a few conversations with them. And I know that that's been really rewarding for me and for the Edmonds UU congregation, and that in our connecting over the houseless car camp and our blood drive, we now have received a request from them this past month, especially with some of what's going on in our current political spectrum, and that they use some of our space for folks who are not necessarily aligned with the center that they have, but are Muslims, do have some relationship to their center and would like somewhere to meet to have conversations. And so I know if we weren't building up that interfaith relationship, then a women's Muslim group would not have asked the center would not have thought of us. I think it's healthy, I guess. And that's why I'm doing it at this point. I think to not do it is almost dangerous, really. I think we can't afford to not have those conversations with our neighbors.
So for those that are interested in starting groups, John, how did you get involved in interfaith work in the first place?
All right. Well, I wish the answer was more inspiring, but actually the BU Interfaith Council sort of got dropped in my lap, which sometimes happens if you've been around the way that leadership in organizations on college campuses work. You'll have like four seniors and then they'll all graduate and panic and then they just pick someone. And so I was close friends with the two previous presidents of the Interfaith Council and had shown interest and participated some in the work that they had done. And I was also actively involved in, I was an intern at the chapel, so I was kind of working with the chaplaincy staff already. So it kind of felt like a logical choice. But from there, we had some leadership transition in the chaplains as well. So we kind of all figured things out together in this past year of doing interfaith with kind of a fresh team of people on campus. But so that's sort of the logistics of it. But a lot of it is conversational work. And especially the way we do interfaith, it's about personal relationships. So you meet someone and then they're connected to someone else. And that's kind of how those bridges get built. And so we attempt to have folks from all the religious traditions on our council so that we have ties to all the religious groups. And so from there, I was able to kind of step into the position better and start doing events and conversations and things like that.
I think I've sort of told this story. I think I could just add a tiny snippet, which is that when I was first volunteering with the Southern Arizona AIDS Foundation, most of my work was I'd fundraise, I'd run the 5K, I'd help open up some quilts and hand out water bottles and, you know, every couple months meet at a local shelter and have lunch with folks who want someone to talk to. And at one point, which is when I started transitioning to Tijon, there was an organizing event at the local Mason Lodge where these different folks were going to get together and just offer a large service. At that point, it was like a spring service, like interfaith spring service. There was no real topic necessarily. I had a friend who was going to be dancing in one of those performances and invited me to go there. And so I did. And I think I recognized something in how the young people were connecting there that I saw lacking in our volunteer network, which was often, you know, local high schoolers and college age students just putting in the time or having some relationship to the organization and just making time on their weekend to do that. Whereas with the interfaith relationship and the dance and the few homilies that were given, I saw more depth to those relationships. And so that's when I decided that I was going to prioritize that and get involved there.
So Jamie, like you mentioned, sometimes it's not the most of inspiring of stories. So what are some of the challenges and pitfalls to doing interfaith work?
Yeah, so there's several challenges. Specifically, there's the challenge of when you're doing interfaith work with young adults, this is more a general challenge of any kind of college programming. It's hard to get attendance and maintain enthusiasm, particularly when you're drawing from populations of students that, like, if I'm going to get Muslim students, they're likely students that are already engaged in the Muslim student group, so they have at least one additional commitment besides the work they're doing. So it's hard to get a lot of regular student participation. And I think the way that we attempted to mitigate that challenge was producing like 2 to 3 really strong, high caliber events in a semester, as opposed to having like a weekly event for people to go to. I think having a really like a well put together and impactful program for people made it more likely that they would participate. So that's definitely a challenge. And then we struggle with getting our Muslim students and our Jewish students, particularly the students or really our students who support Palestine and our students who support Israel and however they identify religiously, kind of secondary to that, to work together. And so often our response to that challenge was to make it not about that, because I believe, and I think BU Interfaith as an organization believes that if you can bring people together as friends first, and if you're like, if my understanding of a person who supports Palestine is my friend Taiba and Yasmin, who's in a class I'm taking, and people that I see on campus every day, as opposed to this like kind of amorphous other, it changes the conversation really tangibly and makes all of the conversations easier and less tense and volatile. And then, I think those were kind of the large challenges. And then, just getting folks to show up and participate. And then leadership transition, as I alluded to earlier, is also a challenge. But I'm really enthusiastic about the folks that are on eBoard next year, so I think that'll work out well.
I think the first thing that I'd raise up is like woundedness, and that when you bring together an interfaith body, really of any age, but it shows up differently for our young folks, as I think our older UUs might know, that when you have woundedness from a faith tradition, not necessarily your own even, but based off of your understanding or experience, you have that pain or that concern. I've often found that those folks who join the interfaith groups I've been a part of are interested in some sort of result or solution or transformation. And it's difficult to work through that, because at least my opinion is, sometimes facilitating those groups, that it's not quite that simple. I mean, we're building up relationships, we're building up beloved community, and as part of that, we'll get to know one another, gain a better understanding of each other's faith traditions, humanize our understanding, and then from there, hopefully reach a point in ourselves and in our own feelings that woundedness is held. And I think that when folks start to attend these meetings, especially if they're just dialogue-focused, that can be frustrating, because it does require work. But I think that's a good challenge to have. So.
Okay, I've got one final question, and then I want to give y'all a chance to speak with each other. So, how do you stay spiritually grounded? Because I'm sure these interfaith projects are not the only thing you're doing with your lives right now. And what do you do when you want to call in spiritually sick, but you got to show up?
Yeah, so that's kind of I think that's not just an interfaith people problem. I think that's a problem for most people who would consider themselves religious people. I know for myself and for the folks that I got to work with doing interfaith, being really grounded in your home spiritual community and doing those practices. Our previous president, Emily, was super active in the Hillel House on campus. So even if interfaith was rough that week, or she had three projects and also had to help organize an interfaith thing, and it was too much, if she could go to Shabbat on Friday nights, that made life a little easier to handle. And I know for myself, I feel healthier when I get to be in worship in Unitarian Universalist spaces on a regular basis. And so making sure that you tap in to the communities that you need is kind of my recommendation for being spiritually grounded. And I know for some of our folks in colleges that don't have the delightful benefit of public transportation, access to Unitarian Universalist churches isn't always a reality. And so I think we're really blessed to have online communities and social media and things like that can help us kind of stay cued in and connected to our faith communities, even if we can't be there physically. And then I guess the other part of that question about grieving a dying project was definitely an experience I had this year doing interfaith. We really wanted to do a progressive dinner through all of the faith spaces on campus. And we like had several dates and like it didn't work the first time. So we like canceled it and tried to replan it and it still didn't work. And eventually we had to say, okay, this isn't going to work this year. Let's move on, plan a different event, see if we can get that to lift off and put this on hold and do a lot of work over the summer to make sure it can really happen next year. And sometimes you have to let go for the year and try again the next time around and make that happen, which is not fun. And that's why it's important to not do interfaith work by yourself. It doesn't really make sense to do interfaith work by yourself, but sometimes you can feel like the only person working on it, at least in the organization structure that we had, but having a council of peers to be like, okay, this was tough and it's not working. We have to accept that and move on. It was helpful to have that support network.
So that was like a threefold question. I think, let's see, how do you stay spiritually grounded amidst all that? That's a great question. I think my honest answer is I'm figuring it out. And that at this point, my habits and what I go to, what I practice is, I have ministers who make it very, 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 very important to me that I need to have a spiritual practice, which is something that our faith talks about often enough, and that having that sort of ritual and that you center yourself around regularly with discipline and with intent and depth is important. And I would argue that everyone should have a spiritual practice, and I know I've got athletic coaches who they don't call it a spiritual practice, but they would say the same thing. So that would be my go-to in terms of that. And, for me, I pray every morning, and I also run. And I think I've definitely had a few ministers who were like, well, I don't know if running is a spiritual practice. And I said, well, you're not a runner. So you don't quite get it, but it's all right. And part of my meditation is running. And so that's how I do that. In terms of when you've got to go in, but you'd like to call in spiritually sick. For me, how I handle that is I take time to specifically prioritize the conversations and connections that I have with folks in that community who are my friends. And I think, you know, in generic terms, I can say everyone in that group I'm friendly with or I'm friends with, or but there are definitely some folks in there, in those communities, who I can turn to and lean on, or at least, you know, or 5 minutes early, I can tell them what's on my heart so that when I enter the space, in order to facilitate or even just be a part of, I've had my space to belong and to be cared for. Because often when you're in a leadership position as well, you may not be given that opportunity if you jump head on in. So that's a big thing here, like even at GA, making sure that there's these times when I stop in the day and I take the time over coffee to talk with someone, I can just chat with. And then as for having to grieve a dying project, what came to mind for me was that, the Tihon Youth Network, would volunteer in the local Tucson, like, sexuality education center, downtown. And about a year and a half ago, that center was shut down. They lost their funding. And so the reason that was so relevant to the interfaith group is not just that we volunteered there, but that we had to recognize that that was a significant part of our community, that was feeling like they'd lost something and that they were hurting. And I think that there are probably other situations where we can see like a certain group within an interfaith group struggling over some issue or another. And so we saw, I guess, not necessarily that our interfaith group had a dying project, but that members of the group were grieving the loss of something. And the way in which we handled that is we just prioritized to spend more time with one another and to invite those folks into our spaces that were semi-similar. So basically, like, we had some folks from local churches given the opportunity to, like, go to an OWL training or just, you know, chat with some of our local Unitarian Universalist ministers about that sort of work, or talk with the UCC minister at the large congregation downtown about the sort of work that they were doing and what safe spaces they had for queer youth. So I guess just sharing of resources and time is how we responded. So.
Okay, now it's your time to talk to one another. And then after that, if you have some questions for our panelists, we'll get to that. But I want to invite you to get into groups of about four. Stephen, would you be willing to flip over the questions for us? And, you know, as conscientious people, we tend to, we're tempted to do interfaith work solely because we want to bring more good into the world. And really, there's a more deeper interconnected reason to do interfaith work. And Stephen hinted at it a little bit, that it's really a family affair. I mean, we are all interfaith people. If not in our own generation, then I raise your hand if you're a seven generation UU. Okay, so one. John is an outlier. But even within your family, is there any individual in your family who is not UU? Please say yes. Not anymore, he says. Okay. So most of us are... John, no. Most of us at least have an interfaith background, right? And so I'd love for you to get into groups of about four people and tell some stories about your ancestry, starting with what is your name, what is the history or the story or the meaning of your name, and then what is the religion or the spirituality of your parents or your grandparents, your ancestors, your family of origin or your chosen family, and how might your ancestral spirituality, spiritual identity, influence how you could do interfaith work. So I'll give you around 10-ish minutes to talk with your neighbors, and then we'll come back together. I knew it. I knew it. Okay, it being that I said 10 minutes and it's been 10 minutes, I want to call us back together, but Jamie, Stephen, and I did not even get to the third question. We were very rich in our discussion, so I don't know if that happened to y'all as well, but I encourage you to continue these conversations with each other and to start new conversations with other people. And I wanted to hand it over to Stephen, who's got some more words on that, and then be thinking of your questions.
So the activity that we just took part in is often used as a part of Beloved Community curriculum that congregational life staff at the UUA and other faith traditions also utilize. And the reason we chose to do that today is in part because Alex wasn't here. But really, and I say this with a lot of enthusiasm, is that part of interfaith work is understanding our interconnectedness and our common ground, and also that each of us have our individual stories and that we do have multiple faith backgrounds and cultural backgrounds and stories, and that those have developed our perspectives and how we view the world and how we choose to treat one another, and that when we take the time, in even such a simple exercise as this, which is one that you can engage your neighbor in quite easily, just on the street or here at GA throughout the hallways, you learn more about them. And you are able to, first off, find out that there are UUs with other, you know, backgrounds, and that we might have some UUs who are also members of other faith traditions and identify that way. And so that opens up this dialogue, but it also, at the end of the day, what it really does is it speaks to the resonances of our interconnectedness and how, in order to best know ourselves and one another, we have to learn that history, and that that's rich and fulfilling, and opens up space for us to see one another as humans instead of just topics or concepts or faith traditions that we know a little bit about, right? And so I hope that when you all chatted, you learned more about one another, and that was something that maybe you felt a little bit of. And I would encourage you, I think we would encourage you to explore that more. And to recognize that sometimes interfaith work is can be small collaborative conversations like that, not just campus ministry or interfaith organizing. So, thank you.
All right, your turn. What questions do you have? And please use the mic because we are recording.
Supposed to identify ourselves as well, I guess.
Yeah. Go for it.
Okay, my name is Norm Hrafter. I'm the minister, UU minister from Halifax, Nova Scotia. I came here not knowing quite what to expect, but maybe I've phrased my question or my insight that there are theologians and such who say that we all have faith. Everyone has a faith. It may not be something we articulate very well. It may not be something that aligns with a long tradition, but we have a faith. That's what guides us, gets us out of bed every day and motivates us. And certainly where I come from, the majority of young people don't identify with a faith tradition in a normal sense. So I'm interested in sort of interfaith dialogue, but in a much broader scale. The idea of just talking to people who are committed to a specific faith tradition makes it a very narrow discussion. And the fact that they are committed sometimes makes it very difficult to get them to think outside the box. And so I'm interested in how you do interfaith, or maybe it's a different word for how you get people to talk about spirituality and what their real faith is. Thank you.
I'm not sure if this will completely answer your question, but one of the things I didn't throw into my original remarks was, and even the question on what the challenges are. We're really fortunate that there's a strong group of secular humanists on BU's campus that are also really excited about interfaith. And perhaps one of our challenges is that we'll throw an event and we'll get 25 humanists and like six other people. And then it's like harder to get a more balanced discussion that way. But I think that speaks to the point that you're making, that these folks definitely have commitments and morals and values, and those values don't fit under the like umbrellas of the major world religions, but they're still actively engaged in those conversations. And the way that we kind of handled that nuance is by doing discussions that are pretty accessible to anybody who shows up. So talking about like spirituality and the body, you're going to show up with a body, so you probably have an opinion about that body. And so they're the kinds of conversations that you can approach either from a specifically religious viewpoint or from a humanist viewpoint. And we were really intentional in balancing our panels by allowing a non-faith person to be on the panel and give that point of view as well.
I think I would echo where you're coming from and maybe just rephrase or add on that creating a culture that hopefully is actually recognized in the local community as some sort of safe space or a space where if you're interested in these topics or these conversations, you can join on in right there. Makes a big difference because then you're not necessarily seen as the interfaith religious group. But the safe haven and the space for to connect with people who have these thoughts and these opinions and these discussions. And I think especially when you find yourself in like a you know, near a college campus or a hub of churches, you'll find that you've got enough young folks who are really interested in those sort of conversations. So that's what I would say. I would say that really it's about the sort of the culture that you create and then how that's messaged to the wider community so that people know that you don't go there if you're religious and you want to talk to other religious people, but you go there, like you said, if you have faith and want to connect over and through that. So, And I would just add, I think young folks crave a space where they feel safe and belong. And if young folks are in charge of this interfaith ministry, that's probably a priority for what they're creating anyways.
Any final questions? Okay, because this may be the only time at GA, hopefully not, but it may be, that you can have a moment of silence, I would like you to join me in a very short meditation. We were trying to think of what could be an interfaith spiritual practice, and we thought most of the world's religions practice silence. So, just for our final minute, take time to reflect on what on the following questions. What am I taking with me from this workshop, and what will I share with others? And what do I have in my life that I am grateful for? And who do I have in my life that I am grateful for? And I have some closing words from Alex, who says, "Go in peace and take with you the fire to live out your faith. Take with you a sense of loving support, and may you have the spirit to make your mark on the world and build connections across faiths." Thank you all for being with us today. And carry on those conversations, and I want to hear some of your stories too.